This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, we're going to start in just a minute. By way of agenda, actually I'll start to talk about this before we even have David. So the recording's already going, right? We're good to start. All right, so this is Jordan Buchanan, and this is the sub-team meeting of the CCTRT face-to-face here in Vienna, first of five. and just by way of agenda for folks, in each of our five meetings, we're going to focus on our individual high-level questions. And the goal is to talk about the data that we actually have around our high-level questions and to start to talk about what findings we might actually be able to draw from our data. It's very exciting. We're going to talk about actual stuff instead of process. And we were originally going to start off this afternoon with a discussion of price competition, but we're doing a little bit of an audible and switching to talking about non-price competition this afternoon, and that's because we only have David from Nielsen here today, and there are some questions in the non-price competition category where we want, where we think the Nielsen data is relevant. He's coming here. Yeah. Pam, do you want to scroll down to the number twos? Oh, but I would assume I was in the Adobe room. Yeah, there we go. All right. That's it. So 2.1 here is the catch-all that Stan had previously identified, which is projects requiring responses to the Nielsen Registrant Survey. We'll skip that for just a minute until we get David. And then we have projects 2.2 through 2.4 are the policy projects, and Dan's been working on an analysis of these. Staff put together a matrix. So Dan, are you ready to talk at all about what you've figured out?
Yeah, wait a minute. Sent last night to the Alice my draft. I'm not sure is it on the wiki right now. If it's not, I can send.
Yeah, Pam, do you have Dan sent out a doc last night? What was the subject of the message, Dan?
Update on discussion paper.
Let's see.
Yeah, did you send that to the list or just to Alice?
To Alice.
Oh, okay.
I can forward it to you if you want. I'll send now to the list.
And just for context, the goal of these policy-related projects is to see whether we see evidence that TLDs are competing based on their policies. And I guess there would also be an aspect of choice in this question as well.
Did you receive it by now?
Yeah, the list may be being slow. Do you want to try to just forward straight to Pam?
Okay.
not David. All right, Dan, do you want to start? You can maybe start just talking us through without us seeing the document.
Okay.
You can use your words.
So after our last call, I changed my high-level questions in a way how we discussed. And now it's how the expansion of GTLD has been effective at promotion of non-price competition between TLD operators. So I spread policy-related question in two sub-question, and after that I also had sub-questions between these two. So first set of questions are related to privacy policy, and it consists five sub-questions which I sent before last call. We saw all these questions. So they consists of questions related: do they share registrant data with other parties? What steps they are taking in order to protect personal data of the registrants? Then after, what circumstances they are disclosing registrants' personal data? Also, one of the questions is, do they register personal data? How they are using registrar personal data? Do they use for other purposes than besides business of registration? Also, do they collect other data such as DNS traffic data? The other set of questions are related to policy in general. These are three new questions which I created few days ago. Probably you will see soon on the screen. First one is that's a bullet number two. First one is, who is eligible to register domain name? So are there any restrictions related to of presence in the country of registry or any other restrictions, jurisdiction and other. Another one is related to compliant procedures and other protection mechanisms in the cases of abusive usage of domain name. And third one is, under what circumstances they are canceling domain name registration. And third set of questions is related to PICs they have implemented. I have so far only first level, so we'll need to develop that part. And that's it so far.
And I guess, Dan, the question I would have that I would want to see answered from this is, to what extent do you see significant variations across the TLDs in the matrix?
I think there's no. Actually, we are using that Excel table which consists 30 top TLDs. Top new GTLD. So I guess we will stick to that number. It will be impossible to analyze all new GTLDs.
Yeah, no, so that makes sense. I guess my question is, like, have you had a chance to look at the data that ICANN's put together and actually determine, like, the thesis is, or the thing we want to figure out is there actually differences across the TLDs, right?
Yeah, look that data, but mainly in a way to create concrete questions. And after if we agree that this is quite enough set of questions, I will continue to develop parts with the answers.
Okay. So we'll have to...
So is this...
Right, so I guess we're at the phase now where Dan's basically asking, are these the sub-questions we want to answer? And then we'll have to actually dig in to...
Or we want something to add or
right.
Delete or anything.
Yeah, go ahead, Stan.
This is Stan. I'm trying to picture what the output looks like here. Is there going to be like a row for every one of the 30 new GTLDs, and then the columns are going to be the answers to each of these questions for that for each of the new GTLDs? I'm trying to picture what the output looks like.
Actually, we already have that table. This will be more like description. With narrative. For these GTLDs, we have table with the answers, not concrete questions like that, but with the topics related with this.
But I mean, let's go back to the very first one, for like whatever is 1.1. Scroll down to 1.1. Okay. So, do they share registry data with third parties? So it's going to be a thing that's going to say yes or no. Is that what you have in mind?
Some of them sharing under different circumstances. So there need to be some description. It can't be just yes or no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It would just help me think understand this if I could sort of again picture what even a mock-up table would look like.
Yeah.
I can pull up the table. I sent it around to the group already.
We've
already conducted this research.
Yeah, but
I think Stan's asking a different question. Is like, what's this document going to look like when,
oh, I understand.
When Dan's done
yes,
looking
exactly.
through? Right, so I guess like you could imagine, maybe we should talk about what's going to be the most useful for us, but like one answer, like in 1.1, he could say, whatever,
never
8 out of 30
said yes.
Or something like
well,
that.
Well, that's the summary. That's the bottom line. But presumably, the raw data are.
Well, that's so they already so I can't already have that table with the raw data.
But is it all classified the same way that this table is set up? I picture this as a matrix, with the rows being the GTLDs and the columns being the questions. And can all those cells be filled in based on what we already know?
Yeah, go ahead, Kylie.
Well, okay, I'm speaking. I'm afraid that I might be a little bit lost here. The high-level question is non-price competition. And then the sub-questions are privacy and user-oriented, but I don't know. My original thinking is that non-price competition is competition in the form of additional services. For example, if you register a domain name with me, I give you a free mailbox or something like that. So yes.
So I think the theory in this case is so that would be one form of
right.
price competition. The theory in this case would be I might choose a TLD to register in based on its privacy policy. So I might say, dot bad privacy, they sell my information
and,
to third parties.
And orientation is that whether they come to me or they ask me to go to them or say like whether they smile, whether they talk to me, things like that.
Well, in this case, there's concrete policy. Like, I guess the first pass is to figure out, do we think that there's significant differences in policies? Like, if all the TLDs have the same policy, then we can just stop talking about this.
But
if there's significant differences, then I think the follow-up question would be, is there any correlation between the
And unfortunately, the way we've done the sampling, it's going to be very hard to answer this question because we took the top 30. But if we answered the question, okay, is there now a correlation between these policies? Like, do people have answer yes to more than 10 of these questions have more registrations than people
that
say no?
My impression from our earlier discussions in the first few months is that registrars, they typically bundle services together. But here in the sub-questions, I do not see those bundling of services as a form of non-price competition.
So this is only looking at policies. We could also, which we are not, we did not identify this as a sub-question that we were trying to answer. In theory, we could have also had a question to look at bundled services, but we think that that happens mostly at the registrar level and isn't relevant to the introduction of new GTLDs. So we didn't, no one's done any research on the question that you're proposing.
So here we are talking about registry level.
Registry level, correct.
Not the registrar level.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Right.
But my understanding is that registries usually do not directly interface with registrars, do they?
No, but they can set policies for how a name can be registered in their registry. So what we looked at was, after discussing it with Dan, for each of the top 30 registries, we looked at what policies they had related to maintaining personal data related to the registrants who are in their registry, general usage policies, abuse, content, jurisdiction, complaints, eligibility to register, which is the key one, and enforcement of those policies.
And if that is the case, then when we talk about registries policies, in relation to this morning, what we talked about, the large-scale speculation, which I consider as another form of abusing that new GTLD program, I can, to the registries, we have a cancellation policy. That is, if you do not have enough registrations within a year or so, or if you do not do such and such, then your approved new GTLD could be canceled by ICANN. So, as a matter of fact, I remember there was in our email discussions, there was for the case of Africa, there were two that were termination.
I think what you're thinking of was those TLDs, their agreements were terminated because they never got to the point of delegation. They have.
Yeah, yes.
It doesn't have anything to do with registration numbers, though.
What's something that you do not do. So I wonder, in order to counter, say, speculation, whether the registries should have some policy set here, say that if the domain names, you do not get it resolved or do not use it and keep it parked, then if that is the case within a year or so, your contract will be...
So Kylie, I think for the purposes of the current discussion, you would suggest we should find out whether there's any registries with that policy already. So that would maybe be in addition to Dan's
list. Yes. Which, especially, as mentioned this morning, it's in the case of China, that speculation is enormous, mass majority.
So Dan, does that make sense to add a question of does the registry or are users allowed to keep the name without using it?
Yeah. So to counter the large scale parked, and which is.
Right, or I guess it would be without using it, or are there any restrictions on parking?
Using, you know, which way. You can use the main just for email. And
just
so we should ask, do they have content on domain name or which way using.
Well, I guess the question is just like whether
you have to find
registry policy
define using.
Requiring either use or specific types of use.
That's included in the spreadsheet that we have.
Okay.
We looked into whether there was any policies on content and about eligibility in general.
That depends on how do you interpret that question. My feeling is that probably we would like to have the question to be much more specific to counter the speculation.
Right. So, but right now we're just at the question. Right now we're fact finding. The question is: do any existing registries have such a policy?
Right.
And we'll find out yes or no, and Dan will add that to the matrix. And then there's a second question of when we get to recommendations: should we have a recommendation that now ICANN requires you to have a policy like that?
Right. I will say that it works both sides.
Sure.
First, present it as a question
whether
the registries you have such a policy. Okay. And then, yes or no, whatever, and then we figure out whether we would like to include that as a recommendation.
Yeah, so that's exactly the sequence, and right now we're at phase one of that. So, so Dan, does that make sense? Just to see, sounds like it may already be in the doc, but just to see whether there's any rule that the registry has in place that requires you to either use the name or not park or something like that. Stan, go ahead.
Stan, going back to your answer before, do you already have this filled in for the questions that are here?
Not as they're displayed in this way. They're more general categories. We looked at all of the policies for the top 30 registries and pulled out language that was applicable to each of these categories, broad categories I talked about.
Going back to Margie's point of this morning, which is this something we could actually do in the time we have remaining based on what we already have? Is this going to be more research?
You should be able to interpret this from the table that you have.
So just to be clear, we could just give it to you and say, fill in the table.
No, this is a more subjective exercise.
So I think the goal here, Dan is, the next phase is Dan's going to go through for each of these questions and then look. So we do have this question of, like, what do we want the output to be? Do we want it to be just a super high-level summary? Do we want 1.1? Do we want the response to be, do they share the registrant's data? Yes or no? Yes, 17%, no, 83%. Or do we want that grid to exist?
I'm just trying to be practical. Who's going to do this?
Dan is translating from the thing that ICANN has into the form of the summary.
Good man.
Actually, I was fixed at the table when I was creating questions. So if some of these questions not completely fit the table, I will change in a way. But it's generally data from the table.
You obviously have not collected the information for the question that Kylie just raised.
We have, provided it fell under the category of these general use categories. I don't know that any of these registries had a specific policy on speculation or limitations on parking or anything like that. If they did, it probably fell under their usage policies, which we captured.
Am I wrong? It just doesn't seem to me like a very easy task to go from general descriptions to filling in a table in a systematic way, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, this is a very qualitative. I mean, what you're asking is a very subjective way of looking at policies and how restrictive they are or not.
Yeah, I think that would be that easy.
You would think that would be easy?
Not that easy.
Yeah, correct.
So
we did the best we could with the policies we had. That's what I'm trying to explain. Like this presents the policies in such a way so you could break it down by these types of categories. I don't disagree. I provided this to you several weeks ago.
Right. All right. Well, Dan's going to try. Right. Yeah. So let's transition. So Dan, it sounds like we had just that one question to add from Kylie, and otherwise, go for it. And is everyone expecting just, I think this will be most useful if we just get that high level summary of like, this many say yes, this many say no, and maybe there's like an in-between, like this many say yes if the user gave us permission or something like that.
Actually, that doesn't sound be that easy. If there was yes or no questions, that would be easy. If there's a range of answers, if there's eight ways you can answer a question, summarizing that's going to be hard.
Yes. I guess I'm proposing we leave it to Dan to figure out how to – he'll bucket it however it makes sense looking at the data. Okay. All right, Dan. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to transition to talk about the survey data now. Because we have David for a little bit. All right, so Stan, I'm going to put you on the spot. You had previously proposed that once we had the registrant survey, there were some projects that we could or should do. I guess at least the first of these, like the switching question, we've already had some discussion about that this morning.
Yeah, the original we had a series of questions for the analysis group to answer, and then there's something called Project 6, projects that depend on responses to the Nielsen Registrant Survey. And there were five questions. I want to focus here on the first three. And the first three were basically putting the respondents' answers into one of three buckets that would exhaustively characterize the respondents. And the buckets were entities new to registering, entities that dropped a registration in the legacy GTLD, but registered in the new GTLDs, and all others. The other group is I sort of lost track here. Did not previously have one, dropped one. That's a switcher. And what was the third? What's the third category? What? Oh, just added to existing. And those are the three categories. And I think this morning we discovered that's not so easy to do based on the survey. And my question is there a way to use those data nonetheless to fill in those categories? We talked briefly after the session this morning, and the question I raised was, if we went back to the raw data, which is one of the ways that David talked about this morning, could we, in fact, categorize each respondent into one of these three buckets and come up with something that sums to 100%?
So first question would be clarification question. People can fit into multiple – people who have registered multiple domains can fit into multiple categories.
Right.
So is your intent to have these categorizations be mutually exclusive to double count people or to have those people who are just one and then everyone else?
I was going to say it seems like we can resolve that just by having a fourth category, right, which is we could have new, switcher, keeper, and some switch, some keep.
Well, I got to be careful here. George and I had a brief conversation about it before. It depends on whether the unit of observation is the domain name or the entity.
The entity.
Okay. There's a way to do it. I have been thinking, quite frankly, about just the entity being the registrant. So I have my category question is, did not previously have any registration in a legacy GTLD. That's the category. Dropped a registration in legacy and all others. And that would exhaust the universe. It doesn't deal with the question you just dealt with, but it, in fact, permits me to sum to 100%, and that's a way to do it.
So you're saying everyone who's ever switched
is a
switcher, regardless of whether you're also...
That is a way to do it. George would say, I should have the observation. Yes, George, I'm sorry. George would say we should use the unit of observation being the name. But this would do it. This would give if you could take every one of your observations and put them in one of these categories, then you would get 100%, and we'd have a rough idea of what the universe looks like.
So what I would suggest is four buckets, and then two of them will sum up to what you're saying, which is that we say, number one is people who've never registered before.
I thought it was fun. Number one would be people who've never registered.
Newcomers.
They're newcomers. So those are easy. Those are mutually exclusive with all the rest. The second would be people who only switched, so they got rid of whatever they had before, so now they only have new TLDs.
Switched everything.
The only thing they said in the response to the survey was that they switched. And then the third would be someone who both switched and kept. And then the fourth would be someone who just kept. Right? You added a new one, but you kept whatever you had.
Yeah,
and then switched and switched plus kept would sum up to your other bucket.
We have to worry about the practicalities here. Just remember, it's whatever the raw data permits them to do. So you'll have to tell us whether we can do this. But I take it one of the strategies would be go back to the raw data, try to reclassify them in a way, that everybody is in one and only one bucket, and
right.
then calculate the percentages. And I don't know whether you can do that or not, but
that's... No, I think that task is actually fairly easy. Famous last words, I know, but
this conversation is being recorded.
Yeah, I mean, we have those people who said all of my new GTLD registrations were brand new. First, let me just step back because this only works for new GTLDs. Yeah, okay. If I had legacy GTLDs, legacy domains registered, that's outside the scope of this classification. Yeah, that's fine. Yes, understood. So I've got people who said it was completely new. I didn't have a prior registration. Okay. We have people who said, I kept my existing GTLD and I added a new one. That applies to everything that I did. And then I gave up a legacy GTLD when I got the new one. That applies to everything I did. So we have those three buckets. We have to do a data validation just to make sure that there's no duplications in there, but that's fairly easy. Then you've got everyone else who said, I did some of this and some of that.
All right. We got Kylie, and then I've got a comment.
I think on top of that, because those questions was under the basic assumption that they're using it. Well, so on top of that, first of all, whether you have registered it, something, if you have registered, are you using it right now?
They didn't ask that question, so we can't use the survey to answer it.
But we
did ask them to allocate, if they had multiple GTLDs, multiple domains registered, we asked them to allocate those among a variety of service categories, parked, redirected, used for an active website, something and something else. So we did ask that question. Regarding, I have to go back and check and see if it was all GTLDs or their new GTLDs, but we have that question in there. Yeah.
So you do have data of parked registrations?
For people who said that, yes. We asked them, if you registered 10 GTLDs, we said how many are parked, how many are redirected to an active site, how many are used for an active site, how many are used for some other purpose, and I believe there's a fourth category there that I'm blanking on.
What if you only registered one?
They didn't. I was checking on that. They didn't. I don't think they were asked what their application was there. So that would be the missing piece of data for that. But
and similarly, we're not going to be able to correlate from a given domain, like how they were using it, to whether they switched or kept it, right?
Correct.
Yeah. But we'll know that they have... Right. We could say, of the switchers, what fraction of them had some of their domains parked, but we couldn't say exactly which domains were were switched apart.
Just remember the basic objective. At a high level, we would like to describe where the registrants to the new GATLDs came from. This is at a fairly gross level. We want to put them in, at least for me, in those three categories so we can tell the world something about where they came from.
Correct.
We have apparently we have a possible strategy or strategy for doing that.
Yeah, but you can't then go and those, you know, this domain was part, or this one was, yeah.
Look, I've got a much more modest objective here.
Yeah, so we'll be able to categorize the registrants, but not the domains.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So it sounds like you can take that back, David, and we'll be able to do Stan's first three projects here, or some variants on them. And then, Stan, do you want to talk through the number 4 and 5?
To recall the survey, you did ask people some questions about whether they did it for defensive reasons.
Right? Yes.
That's one of your questions.
Yeah.
And so I haven't looked at every slide in your in the presentation, so I'll have to go back and look at that. But we'd like to say something about the proportion of new registrations that were done for defensive reasons.
Yeah, that's easy.
It's 4 and 5 because 4 is about the defensiveness, and 4 is for defensiveness versus benefits, and 5 tries to describe the benefits, which are more open-ended.
Well, let me start with the part I understand, or I think I do anyway. We asked them, what would you say was your primary reason for registering a new GTLD? Mm-hmm. Globally, 60%, and actually this varied very little by region. It was very consistent across regions. So protect an existing domain and ensure no one else got a similar domain. 60% gave that response. To appeal to new internet users or new types of customers, 34% gave that response. You want the actual slide number?
No, that's okay.
Okay. And the name I wanted was not available using older GTLDs, 6%. Yeah, it's slide 51. I don't know who's got the clicker. There it is right there. Somebody was very quick.
I wish I could read it from here.
Yeah. That's why I was... So you can see, you know, very much protective reasons, the dominant reason, about a third saying it was to appeal to different people, and a very small percentage said it's because I couldn't find what I wanted. That number was significantly higher in Africa and North America. But still, you were looking at 13%, 14%.
So I'll look at that more carefully, but that looks like an answer to question 4 here, which is why did you do it?
Yeah.
And question 5, which I'm not sure we can answer, is basically where you switched because of the not the defensive reasons, but for the benefits. Could you characterize what the benefits were? And maybe that's included in this slide as well. I have not looked at 51 with any care. So
if we go ahead to slide 54, we asked them reasons why they considered switching. So these were people, well, this is for people who didn't register. So that's probably not what you're looking for. But this is kind of why they were looking to switch there. You would normally expect that the people who are thinking about it and the people who did had at least similar benefit expectations, but it's not a direct answer.
I think 51 does provide the answer to question 4. I'll have to look at that more carefully.
But slides 54 and 55, for those who didn't, switch or those who decided not to switch, why or why not, that's in there.
In a way, 51 answers both, because the first line is defensive, and the next two are for benefits, and it talks about the two different, it describes two different kinds of benefits, if you like.
Correct.
Yeah, so that's great. Is there any other... So those are the projects that Stan had identified as being relevant to competition from the registrant survey. We had not identified any other registrant survey projects, so now is the time for us to figure out if we're missing anything. And Megan's got an intervention, and Elisa. All right, so I got... Pardon?
Just before that.
Okay, Yawada.
Yeah, still on this notion of competition in this registrant space, I wanted to really fully understand that concept of competition in, amongst registrants.
It's not amongst registrants. The idea here is just to look at all the evidence that we can see for non-price factors relating to competition amongst registries.
Registries.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think we're trying to get at is, through these questions, is to what extent are the new GTLDs providing competition for the legacy GTLD for other options. So if what we saw in the survey, which we don't, is that everyone said, oh, I couldn't find the name I was looking for in the old TLDs, so I registered in the new GTLDs, and that would be a form of non-price competition. Everyone would be switching to the new GTLDs because the namespace was what they were attracting.
Non-price competition within the registry.
Within the registry, yeah. That's what we're looking at in this topic. Now, Megan.
Okay, thanks. So I wanted to ask about project or activity 4.2. I think that's what's called on your list. Oh, you were going to bring it up. Okay. It's mine, exactly. And I think that the results of the survey could very easily answer, well, not easily, but usefully provide us with some data on that. And whoever's controlling the Excel file could perhaps show it again. And then Dave can have a look at what it is. Effectively, you have answered this question this morning to a certain extent from the registrant survey. And I asked you exactly what the correlation was in the consumer survey. And someone said it's on page 9 or slide 9 of the consumer survey. So if you look at 4.2 on here, the idea was to look at, it's called greater regulation and segmentation, more valuable to the consumer as a user and less to the registrant. But I think what we really mean there is regulation and segmentation is really this issue of protective mechanisms, safe, what we call safeguards, et cetera. And you identified it as, I think, restrictions, which, of course, we would never say they're restrictions.
Yeah.
But those are...
restrictions are validations.
Yeah. Yeah, validations, I think. And the idea was that this was really, I mean, it's more of a consumer protection-related issue, but it's also a consumer choice issue. And I think by comparing the data between the consumers and the registrants on your restrictions, so-called restrictions aspects, we could probably answer some part of that question quite usefully. You see what 4.2 is?
Yeah, I do. I had a clarification question. Regulation and segmentation. Segmentation probably means something different to me than was intended here. What was the implication of, or why is segmentation related to regulation here?
I don't know who put segmentation in. I don't know where it
Okay.
came from.
All right.
I think the idea here is... but I think the idea here is that they are sort of parallel. Like, is it valuable to divide up? If you could imagine a universe in which there was a word for every possible... there was a TLD for every possible registration that you would perform, and you were required to register in that TLD... then you would have both perfect regulation and segmentation, right?
Got it.
If you were a taxi company, you have to register in that taxi.
Right.
If you were a plumber, you have to register in that plumber.
the caste system of
yeah. So like obviously that's like one extreme version of it, but like we could be working towards that. It could be that if you're a pharmacy, you really want to register in dot pharmacy, and you could only register in dot pharmacy if you're actually a pharmacy. And so that's why I think why the paired concepts of segmentation and regulation showed up here.
Yeah. All right. That makes sense. So yes, certainly we can contrast the attitudes towards regulations, restrictions, validations, whatever we want to call them. Safeguards would have been a good positive-leaning term. We can contrast those between the two surveys and look at any systematic differences. I haven't done that recently, so I can't spout that off the top of my head. What I can say is one thing that was interesting to me there is that light registrants versus heavy registrants, they tended to have the same points of view about restrictions. So it's not necessarily something I kind of expected to see is that those people who do a lot more of it may be less in tune to restrictions, and they weren't. It was pretty flat. And I think we'll see the same thing looking between registrants and consumers is that it's a little bit different but pretty close to each other. So the perceived value of validations is pretty common between the two.
That's clear from slide 9, that the consumers have a very slightly higher percentage of positive reaction to these validation aspects. But they're certainly consistent. So we couldn't say, according to this, that it's more valuable to the one compared to the registrant. I mean, it's slightly more valuable to the consumer. But the registrant has an issue as well in terms of making sure that people feel safe and trusted and can use their...
Yeah, and we, you know, we didn't do a deep dive into it, but I would suspect for a lot of people it's a... philosophical orientation as opposed to necessarily really practical. I think it's a good, you know, essentially they're saying, I think it's a good thing that some of this cautions are taken. And even if it may put a little bit more restriction on me as a registrant, they aren't experiencing that. They still see it as being valuable.
Yeah. And then just to go on to what Jordan said about segmentation and to the previous question on switching and new registrants. But I think this is too complicated. When you look at the data that you're going to look at for STAM, this is just purely quantitative. It's not qualitative, is it? So we wouldn't be able to tell the other part of the segmentation argument from the data that you're going to produce for that. I was thinking, for example, as Jordan said, if you are a bank, are you going to be more likely to go to .bank rather than .com, et cetera, et cetera? And that was one of the, I think that was part of the segmentation argument that we were trying to look at. I think it's just too complicated, though. I don't think we have sufficient data for that.
We have stuff that talks around it, but nothing directly.
Yeah.
We know, for example, that perception of relevance of the GTLD is the number one factor in why they would choose it. But what we can't say is whether a bank would say .com is most relevant to me because that's the most widely known, or .bank is more relevant to me because that describes my industry. You know, we don't have that.
Okay, but then could you look at that relevance, what you call relevance? Did you ask the same question to the consumers and to the registrants so that we could compare whether there was an interest in...
No, because we stripped out any kind of or almost all the registration-related questions from the consumer survey.
Okay, let's forget it then. Let's just go to the restrictions, so-called.
Yeah,
restrictions
I think the closest thing we would have, Megan, would be the questions about trust in the consumer survey.
Exactly.
Like, would you trust this site, whether you would like prefer to navigate to it?
No. Okay, let's leave it just on the validation aspect, restriction validation. Okay, I think that's sufficient, isn't it?
Sure. All right. Any other places where we think we can use the registrant survey? Oh, sorry, Aliza. I had you in the queue and totally forgot.
No, that's okay. This is Aliza. So I was going to mention there's a couple of more projects in this chart that refer to the registrant survey.
One was, how easy is it to register a domain name or one you're satisfied with? That's 5.4, and Dave talked through that earlier. The other
6.2.
Do registrants in different languages and regions view relevant TLDs as expanded choice? I don't know that the survey covered. We talked about geo-TLDs and preferences for geographically relevant TLDs, but I don't know that we talked about language preference, like the availability of languages, preferred languages.
That may or may not be a wise thing. Name I wanted was not available. There is no regional, significant regional difference, a little bit, but I'll find the other things. But it's in here.
Yeah, go ahead, Stan.
Comment that raises following, which is, and this is not for this survey, but it's for the next survey. We could ask a more granular set of questions about the reason, the benefits you get from switching or registering a new domain. So if there were more choices, we might have gotten be able to get answers to the question that you just raised, which is, I want to be part of a community or for some other reason.
If I can ask a complimentary question, because you don't like it when I say corollary. Teasing, it's mine. When you do the assessment or the gather, you put together the data for Stan's questions about, I'm calling them Stan's questions now, about new registrants, switchers, keepers, etc., however you call them. In theory, you should be able to also tell if they've moved to a new language, isn't that correct? Oops.
Sorry, it was an echo, I guess, is what I was hearing. Yeah.
One of the questions we're asking is about whether people are using internationalized domain names or new languages, other languages. So if .bank exists in Chinese script, why is it doing that? Is it me, or is it the... Should I turn it off? Mine is on mute. It never works anyway. Too, if I... This one.
Test. David, turn off your mic for a minute. Test. It's not in this room.
Anyway, in brief, and you'll have to hear it twice, the question is, can you distinguish also in those new registrants, switchers, et cetera, if there has been a switching to other languages or other scripts? That's the question.
Now my mic's on. There's a couple of things I can do. I can look at those who registered a new GTLD versus those who didn't and see if there's a substantive difference in their response to things like there were plenty of choices. It's easy to find a domain name that works for me, those sorts of things. And I can also look at that response earlier that I was talking about would have a higher acceptance or a higher belief that those things were true. And I'll stop there because I... I'll take that onto my to-do list.
All right. Can we just turn these? Oh, is he? This is very mysterious. Yeah. Okay. Hello. Yeah. All right. Okay, so we have a couple follow-up tasks there. I guess while we have David, let's just think about these other projects for just a moment. So on 6.2, I guess what we need from Megan or someone is to go through the survey questions, just figure out which ones we think we need to do crosstabs for, in order to understand whether registrants have sort of choice from the program or not in terms of language and community. Pardon? But David's going to do that already? All right, cool. So today we'll do the crosstabs, and then we'll be done. Elisa?
David, are you clear on what the questions are for which we would like crosstabs?
I believe so.
Okay.
I'm realizing one of them isn't possible because we only asked it of people who considered switching, so they were by nature already aware. But I'll still do what I can with what we've got.
All right. Go ahead, Kylie.
Okay, I'm speaking. Well, just continue this morning's discussions. We noticed that there's some discrepancies about the sample space, that whatever it is representative of the overall population of all the end users or whatsoever. Do you have any way to to correct or improve on that? Because without that foundation, that's right. whatever conclusion or data we collect may not be that trustworthy after all.
Yeah, I...
So really whether we can depend on your data or conclusion, that itself, if that itself is a question, then what, so that's, I think, the biggest problem.
Yeah, and I'm assuming this relates to the discussion we were having this morning about the number, the incidence of registration in the actual population. And again, this survey wasn't set up to look at incidence, and we would have set it up significantly differently if that had been, or we would have done a different task if that had been one of the key objectives. So certainly we could do something to look at actual incidence. It would require a different sampling methodology. That is, I know it's hard to separate those things, but it's a little bit different than representation. Because, and I can say that because, for example, we had a group last year, we had a group of people who came from ICANN-provided sample. So we know they are who they are. And what we took them out because they were much more active. Well, when we look at the people in our sample who were more active, they come close, much closer to that ICANN-provided sample. So there's an internal validation going on that, yeah, if the people that we find naturally who are the closest in terms of activity to that ICANN-provided sample, they look and feel a lot like that ICANN-provided sample. And we did a lot of other internal validation things. Is that to say that the sample is perfect and there isn't a single spoofer in there? No, I would never make that claim. There are, but that stuff's going to be down at the noise level. So two different things. You can still have, let me use a political analogy. I can do a poll. I don't do these, but I can do one that replicates the voting population. That's very different from saying what percentage of the people are going to actually go to the poll and vote. Though you would do those in... you'd have some different requirements on both of those objectives. So, and that doesn't invalidate the likelihood of candidate A or B winning. They're slightly different. They're substantially different tasks, and I wouldn't use the methodology that we used here in order to project incidence rates for registrations, but I do think we get a fairly representative look at the people who have ever registered.
Well, what you said might be true for many regions or countries, but obviously, as we discussed this morning, at least for China, it's way off. It doesn't even make sense, the conclusion here. So I would... wonder whether, because the importance of China, especially it has over 50% of the total registration, so whether you can do another sampling for China.
So Kylie, I guess just to try to understand the issue here, are you concerned that because the percentage of respondents of the initial 11,000 is higher than you would expect, the percentage of those people who have registered a domain name is higher than you would expect, that therefore you're just worried about the quality of the overall data?
I don't worry, as a matter of fact. It's entirely meaningless. I don't even worry because... considering China, 1.3 billion, okay, out of that 11,000, 3,000 said they registered for the last, which in China it interprets into like 300 million.
Well, if you start at your 800 million.
Even 3 million, that will be an overestimate, I will say.
That's not obvious, I guess, because if you start at your 800 million actual internet users number.
Well, same.
And you make it 30%, that's 240 million, and that's probably about double the number of registrants.
No, it's not in China. Okay.
There's 200.
Just to think, if I go to register a domain name, I might be followed. Okay.
So it is also possible maybe people who are on internet panels also are more likely to be domain registrants.
Well,
which we're not controlling for. We're not even attempting to control for that because we're starting with people who are on
that,
internet panels.
If that is the case, then that means that their panel is extremely distorted, at least for the case of China.
But again, incidents versus there are a variety of ways why you can't trust incidence data from a survey like this. People are impaneled through a variety of recruitment methods that could skew that. They may be asked to participate in this specific survey, or they are targeted. Panel companies know certain things about the people on their panels, so they target the invitations towards certain people. So, for example, if I want to do a survey with IT professionals, the panels know that they've got these people. They know they're IT professionals, so they target the invitation. So without going through and exhaustively looking how each panel provider and panels brings people into their panels, is it by river sampling, is it by banner ads, is it, you know, however, without knowing that and then not knowing how they targeted for this specific interview, any kind of supposition about incidents is invalid. I wouldn't even look at it. The only reason it came up is because we decided opportunistically to ask people who said they hadn't registered some additional questions, and we have a group of people who answered those questions. But that doesn't mean that's exhaustive.
Let me just put it this way.
Yeah.
I'm a professor in the school, in the university. I will tell you, I can right away tell you, I can guarantee you that nobody in my entire university has ever registered a domain name.
So, but let me, just to like make a hypothetical, if I went to the mall and I surveyed people and I said, have you gone shopping in the last week? I would get a very, very high percentage of people saying that they went much higher than I would expect from the general population. So if their panels are targeted at people that are likely to be domain registrants, then of course a very high fraction of them are going to respond that they have registered a domain name.
So first, then the question is, how did you get your panel? If the panel for your shopping purpose, you went to the shopping mall to ask people around, have you shopped today? Okay, that's a question. If you went to the desert to ask people, have you, and that sample space in the desert is entirely different from the people you ask in the shopping mall. So then the question is, where did your panel come from? Out of where?
All right, I got Stan, Aliza,
and so,
I'm going to try to wrap this up because
considering China, well, I would say buy a domain name from the registrar, that's easy. Anybody can do that. Just pay a few bucks. Okay.
But that's the definition. That's the definition of, that's what we're asking them.
Yeah, but then there's an even bigger issue. That's why this morning I said it's well recognized. Everybody agrees that well over 90% or even 99% are speculation. Because if you register a name, fine. If you really want to put that in use, at least to be resolved by the internet, okay, that's a huge trouble. Government scrutiny plus, well, put it this way, I wouldn't do that.
right, I've got Stan.
So
we need to let David go to the other room.
Anyway, if China doesn't have over 50% of the new registration over the last 2 years, fine, we don't care. But the problem is China has that, and China is so different from probably the rest of the world. So therefore, I would suggest that we take another look into this, the source of this data and how reliable it is. To my understanding, and not best understanding, my entire understanding, the current data collected, or we discussed this morning, is way off from the reality in China. So by orders of magnitude.
All right, Stan?
Actually, I have a request to David, and I've also already made this request to Greg. We're going to use the results of your survey and some of the results of the economic analysis in our report. So what I would request is that you think about writing up for our benefit a description of essentially the brief one, a description of the sort of the process by which the data were collected. And to the extent that you have qualifications about strengths and weaknesses, that would be appropriate as well. Just think of it as something that we're going to cite your results, but we have to tell the reader something about the underlying source of the data. And sort of think of it from our point of view, what would you want us to say about your data briefly in our report?
I agree with Stan. So, Nelson, if you can do it, do it. If you just say, sorry, we cannot do it beyond our capacity, then just at least explicitly put it up front. And then,
there's no barrier to writing a document about how we sourced things and how methodologically we did it. You may not trust it, but I can say what we did. That's factual.
Okay. If you say what you did, but also what I'm asking is you not only telling the truth, but also all the truth. How did you derive the data?
Not a document, please. Think of it as some long footnotes in a report, okay? That's my view.
Fair enough.
That's my picture of it, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so we've got David's got to go to the other room, so we're going to have to let him go, and we'll wait to... Oh, really? Oh.
I was told that we were wrapping up.
Oh, okay.
This is very confusing. I'm being told different. Anyways, let's assume that that's the case anyways, because I want to actually, unless people have a specific data they're wanting to discuss with David, I want to transition the conversation to trying to figure out what we know at this point. And on this particular topic, it sounds like we're going to need to get some more information back before we can draw. Oh, wait, I have to present on my thing, too. Except I don't trust the data that I got from ICANN, so we'll have to have that conversation in just a minute. All right, any other questions for David before we send him off? Thanks, David. All right, so there's one other project that we did, and this project's targeted at figuring out whether people are registering in the new GTLDs despite the fact that they could have registered in .com in particular. And so what ICANN says they did was to look at, for each registration in the new GTLDs as of April, they look to see for every name that was registered in the TLD. So let's say for a moment the TLD we're talking about is .photography. For every name in photography, they looked and said, for the second level domain, was sldphotography.com available? So this is this is Jonathan's example. He has bigshots.photography. So is bigshotsphotography.com available? And the theory here is that if bigshotsphotography.com is available and bigshots.photography is registered, then that person, the registrar, would have been able to register the .com, and they chose not to for some reason. And that would be, it could be price, which would make a price competition, or it could not be price, and then it would be non-price competition. So, ICANN did this. And if I did my, if my Excel skills are correct, only 18% of the names that were registered had the .com equivalent available. But I don't believe this.
What's the universe?
Of all the names registered in new TLDs,
every single one.
For every single one as of April, what fraction of them had SLDTLD.com available as of the end of April, basically. So there's actually a small time discontinuity, and we're not looking at the moment at which the name was registered. We're looking at a moment in time.
And why don't you believe it?
Because in some of the TLDs, like .wang, it's only like 1% of the registrations fall into this category. So that means that there's like a million Wang registrations, and only 10,000 of them have the combination available in .com.
So it's 10. So it's 18% is the average overall.
18% is the average, but I don't believe it because it seems implausible to me. And .dot Jin XIN.
But if you go use your example, one way to deal with that, more project, is to calculate it on a. At least for a sample of new gTLDs. So this average may, what you're suggesting is that the average hides a much wider variation.
Oh, so we have it per TLD per TLD, so we can look and see that.
All right.
I'm a little skeptical of it. I want to go back with ICANN and look at some of these because it seems implausible to me that in some cases that
But your example suggests that we should report more than the average.
We should probably, yes, I think we would want to talk about TLDs where the numbers are particularly high or
particularly, give a range or the top
particularly
low. Or something like that.
So, for example, in there's a TLD.actor, and I noticed right off the bat that had a very low percent available. And that didn't surprise me at all. I thought, okay, well, Tom Cruise actor is probably taken already, and it's not surprising that someone could get Tom Cruise.actor and Tom Cruise actor was already available. But for a million names across something like that Wang, it just seems surprising.
The two issues. One, you're skeptical about the quality of the data.
Right.
And the other is my suggestion, which is reporting more statistics than the simple average.
Yes, I think we will want to do that. We will want to report the average. We'll want to report. I mean, the outliers are going to be very uninteresting. The outliers, the high and the low will probably be 0 and 100 or something like that.
But there are other measures like the top quartile.
Right. So, yes, we'll probably want to look at things like quartiles or standard deviation or something like that. So we'll come back to this, but if the answer were 18%, this would imply that in general, people are being might actually be pushed into these new TLDs because they can't find the names they want. That doesn't match the registrant survey as well, which said that only 6% of registrants in the new gTLDs couldn't get them. Or it could just be that everyone's registering defensively.
Which project is that, by the
way? This is mine. This is why I'm talking about it. Because so far the extent of my analysis has been to glance over it and be like, I don't believe this. All right. Elise, I guess we'll talk about how we can
be just interesting to figure out how we can sanity check some of these things. I mean, it might be interesting to just choose a few that have really low numbers and the TLD is not that big, and just like get the actual list and like hand check it and make sure it looks roughly plausible. I think you guys probably can't share the BRDA data with me in particular, so we'll just have to agree on some sampling. Like, I think we just need to hand check some of it, and we'll just have to figure out a sampling mechanism to do that. Otherwise, I'd be glad to do it. All right, so I think that's the extent of our projects for non-price competition. So I want to just talk us through, once we get all of our projects wrapped up, which is hopefully really soon, what will we know? And do we think that's going to be adequate to write about non-price competition? So, if we get the answer to Stan's five questions, we will know sort of what fraction of people fall into these buckets of new people, switchers, keepers. And Stan, what do we expect?
That's not limited to non-price competition. Some of the behavior we're observing may be a response to prices. So I regard that as very high level. Where did the registrants in the new domains come from? That's something I would want to know, irrespective of understanding exactly the motivations for the movements.
Yeah, it's possible we need a higher level question, which is just did the new GTLD program increase competition regardless of why?
We have even higher level questions, which is sort of what happened.
Sure. But I guess I guess I'm saying something slightly different, which is we proposed back in LA or something like that, here's the six questions we're going to try to answer. And in some cases on the competition questions in particular, we split it up into price and non-price. And in some cases, we're going to say things that are not informative of one or the other. Like, they'll answer the question of whether there's competition happening, but we won't know the source of the competition. And so we may have to address that as a standalone question.
I think we should, at the moment, focus on the facts as we know them. The question of interpretation is separate, and we ought to think about that as a separate issue. But I think we have to nail down what we believe the facts are.
Okay. So at the end of, so hopefully sometime soon we will be able to characterize the registrant pool into these various buckets, three or four buckets. And you expect that to roughly help us understand whether these people are, like, tell us how would we go to interpretation from that data? Like, what do you expect to?
I'm not sure that by themselves they'll answer that question, but if somebody is asking us to characterize what happened, if you want to think of it as not the competition part, think of it as the consumer choice part of the exercise. What did consumers choose to do in the new environment? So that's going to tell us something about what they did. And I regard that as sort of part of the puzzle. I think it's going to be very hard to answer some of the other questions about price competition for reasons we'll get into later. But that will tell us something about consumer behavior in response to a wider range of alternatives, something I think we would want to know.
Okay, and then on the fourth and fifth questions about sort of defensive versus benefits.
I hadn't looked at the entire survey before. I was focusing on slide 52. Slide 51 has some partial answers to the question of why people registered in the new domains. There were three categories. I think going back to Megan's earlier point, if we had anticipated this, we might have suggested a more granular set of alternative reasons, or it might be multiple reasons. But right now we do have defensive versus two other categories. I don't have slide 51 in front of us, but I can imagine writing up something based on the contents of slide 51.
Right, and so
between your two sets of projects, it sounds like what we will know is sort of like why your second two sort of tell us why people registered, and then your first three sort of tell us, okay, after you registered, like, what did you do, or did you come at it afresh, right? Like, are you a switcher from?
I would say the first three are where did you come, where do they come from, and the last two were designed to deal with the question of why. And I think slide 51 provides a limited answer to that question, the best we're going to do in the circumstances.
Yeah, Kylie?
Yeah. Related to the categories. Again, one more category should be whether it's for speculation. That means it's parked or not. Can we include that?
So we're doing a separate project. I guess in running through all of, like, Stan has asked that for basically all the metrics that we have about domain counts and so on, that we then say we recalculate it, taking out the parked people.
Okay. After,
if we actually get hold of data that allows us to do that.
But we can't ask the survey to give us information they didn't collect.
Correct. But once again, we don't need to look at the survey to ask to see what parking behavior is, because we can just look at parking behavior.
What he said.
Put it this way. Well, I hate to say that repeatedly. As China has, from the data we have, China has 53% of new registration. And it's widely believed, at least in China, that over 90% of those are for speculation. That means being parked. Okay. So that means that, well, half of them are already not, should be excluded. However, if the data, whoever Nelson or NS group collect, have not excluded the parked data. As Stan, you mentioned, they did not collect that. If that is the case, then that the calculation itself is grossly distorted.
What Jordan is saying is, if we want to understand the frequency of parking,
mm-hmm.
we needn't go to the Nielsen survey. We can collect data on parking directly. And the original set of project requests says in the very first item, perform all calculations using data both for all registrants and all non-park registrants. And if the point is that parking is an important issue, I think we recognize that.
Okay.
And it's important for us to get data on parking so we can do the alternative calculation.
And let me put this through a particular lens. So right now, according to NTLD stats, of all the domain registrations in new GTLDs, 58% are parked. So the majority of them. This is the NTLD stats. If you just click, right now it says 58%.
But whatever.
I just clicked on the link. I'm just telling you what the link is.
More than half.
This is live. This is real time. Stuff's changed.
Well, that's more than half.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, it's more than half. Either 58 or 75.
Right, but it's entirely possible that everything you say is 100% true, Kylie, that 53% of registrations are in China and 90% of those are parked, and that everywhere else in the world, people aren't parking at all. And if we wanted to look at per geography parking statistics, in theory, we could ask NTLD, we could intersect who is data and NTLD stats data.
Right.
But we do see that parking is a significant, it's more than half. So at some point it was 75. Now it's 58.
Okay.
But there's a large amount of parking. We all agree. And we have to deal with the fact that there is a large amount of parking as we think about what the implications for competition are.
Let me say one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Stan. Oh, and so we got
Jordan. Just one more quick thing, if I may.
All right, I got Stan, then Jamie.
For the purpose of many of your calculations, parking would not be important if the parking rates do not vary across GTLDs. But they probably do. But the point is that they're two separate issues. One is how much parking there is, and the other is how much it affects the statistics that we've calculated. The latter depends on the for many of the calculations, depends only on the variation in parking rates across TLDs.
And in particular,
that may be important.
In particular, you mean between legacy and new
TLDs. But there's also, turns out, if I remember the NDLT stats data, the parking rates do vary a lot. The number 75% had some 99% and some much lower than 75%. So there is variability. But there are two different concerns. One is, how does it affect the calculations that we're doing? I think it's important that we deal with that. And the other is how important parking is as a phenomenon.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Okay, Jamie, can you talk? Can we hear you, I guess, is the question. Yep, there we go.
Can you hear me? Okay. So I don't have the NTLD stats in front of me or some of the other data. What I have heard in this conversation, though, is a lot of recitation of everybody knows, and, you know, 99% of domain names are speculative and things like that. This review team will have zero credibility if we rely on conjecture and opinion to make any point, as opposed to the data, flawed as it may be. So I would urge this group to get away from hyperbole and talking about just as everybody knows, because that's not going to get us to a place where we need to be. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. And I think that echoes a point that Jonathan had made earlier today to make sure that we're grounding all of our statements in data. It's certainly the case. I'm just looking at the NTLD stats site right now. Certainly the case that, like, .wang and .jin, is that how you say it? X-I-N? How do you say that, Kylie? Xin. .wang and .xin, I would expect almost all the registrations for those to be in China. And .wang is 85% parked, so it's a lot of parked. Not quite 90, but pretty close. And .jin is 97.8% parked. So it does seem that some... .xin, yeah. It's big. There's
X-I-N.
I think that's one of the Zodiac.
Elegant
Leader Limited. Oh,
the registry is Elegant Leader Limited.
It's a Chinese registry. But anyways, there's several hundred thousand .xin, .xin registrations. Almost all of them are parked. So it does seem like we could certainly talk about how at least some of these TLDs that we would expect to have lots of Chinese registrants. I think there's some other data. Like, maybe we can do some other correlations to who is data as well. But I think it actually probably, you're right that Kylie, that China is a large population and a large population of the registrants, whether it's 53 or whatever. But if we look at overall parking rates and we don't necessarily worry about the country of origin, it will still tell us overall what the effect on the broader marketplace is. And China may just be part of that that equation. All right, so I'm going to resume running through this. Are we supposed to wrap up at 45 or? Oh, yeah.
I don't know if this should be, this data should be collected by Nielsen or an asset group, is that the price of the domain name, how important it is for the registrant.
So I think that should already be in the Nielsen survey. It's like one of the things, like
collected that data?
Yes, that's in the if you look through the slide deck,
what was the conclusion, because I do not.
And I don't know if we broke out, is the crosstab, we could probably break out a crosstab for China or something like that.
If you look at slide 54 in the registrant report, one of the questions asked is, what are the reasons you considered switching to a new GTLD, and good value priced well is one of the response options. And
what was the...
It was 37% stated that was their reason, and across the board it was pretty consistent across regions.
The number one factor was
Not the number one factor. The number one factor is that they consider them to be modern.
The new G is modern?
Yes.
Hmm.
The other thing I think we will...
Number two is new G is cheaper?
No, it better targets specific
groups. How far down?
Good value price roll is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
However, this is per registrant. It may be that if we look on a registration basis, the price is very important. I think one of the things that we'll want to look at is to what extent there's a relationship between wholesale price and volume, and I suspect there is one.
The point that I feel this is important is that, well, probably the most important benefit of introducing competition is to lower the price. If not, however, from the buyer's or registrant's point of view, if that price is very small, among all the food items, nowadays, nobody considers the price of salt as important. Although you must have salt, but whether the price of salt is doubled or even tripled, nobody cares. So therefore, to introduce competition in salt market probably is insignificant, not important at all. So therefore, coming back to our new GTLD program, so whether the new G program has introduced competition, so in order to lower the price, probably that's not at all important to the overall market. So I
want to kick this conversation until tomorrow because tomorrow morning we're explicitly talking about price competition. So we'll have two hours.
Because Nelson is leaving tomorrow, so just if this question belongs to them, probably I would like to see them expand.
Well, so we don't have. We're done asking questions of registrants. We have the data that we have, and the question is, what can we do with it?
But anyway, because they have the raw data.
That's right. So if there's questions where we know.
We ask them, and then they.
You also have the raw data. I sent you all the raw data tables. So you can look at all of the crosstabs. I just want to be clear that you also have access to the data.
Right. I agree with you. But still, let them do the work for us.
Yeah. All right. So quickly to run back through our projects and what we will know. We talked about Stan's questions. We have Dan's projects, so what we will know from Dan's projects is there variance in various types of policies that registries have? And then I guess if we wanted to, depending on the results of that, I think we may want to have a follow-up question, which is, does any of that influence consumer behavior? But I think we would only want to spend that time if we saw that there's significant variance between registries and any of the policies. Once I validate with ICANN
comment. Lisa mentioned before the question how hard is it to register the domain name. Maybe we should add that question in my list of questions. We have answer for that probably from the analysis. It's from the registrant survey. Do we have an answer for that, or we must ask again?
Yes, no, we have that in the survey. How hard or how easy is it to register a domain name? Yes, there is.
So maybe we should include that in the list.
But you're doing yours on a registry by registry basis.
Yeah.
So you don't have answers to that question registry by registry from the survey.
No, I'm. This is two separate issues. So you're asking Dan whether the survey contains any questions regarding registrants' response to the question or responses to the question how hard or easy is it to register a donating name? That answer is yes. Separately, your project is looking at registration policies, use and abuse policies that registries set for registrants. So they're, I mean, they're.
Yeah, but my point is that he's filling it. The
I understand.
Is the major,
so, no, the survey does not break the answers down by
registrants
in a TLT. So I couldn't tell you that those who said that it's difficult are mainly registered in
exactly.
this TLD or
exactly.
that TLD.
Exactly.
The survey doesn't indicate
exactly.
that. So your exercise would complement that.
Right, we will, and we will, there is a, we actually talked about this earlier, it's not in the competition section, but in the consumer choice part, there's some, we do have a project that's specifically targeted.
I'm sorry, I'm confused about the answer. Suppose we, I agree with Lisa that we can't get that information from the Nielsen survey. So the question now, and back to Dehun, how is he going to fill in his matrix row about ease of registering or column?
There shouldn't be one.
He shouldn't be asking that question in his paper. His paper is asking about when a registrant goes to register a name, when they see all of the various policies available in a different TLD, would you perhaps be more interested in this TLD, TLDA over TLDB, because they have a better privacy policy, for example?
Exactly. But he can't answer. He can't. That's the question. Answer the question. No, it's really easy in A and really hard in B and semi-hard in C.
It's not a value judgment.
He doesn't have that information at
exactly.
all. So you can't, as far as I can tell, you can't really analyze that as part of your analysis because you can't rely on the Nielsen survey for that information.
Yeah, but we will be separately answering that question, Dan. So it's just a slight, it's slightly separate from your document. All right, so then if I can converge with ICANN on the data, we will also know whether people are registering in new TLDs despite the fact they could have registered their name in .com. And that's all we'll know. So that's all the things we will know about non-price competition if we complete our current work. Hopefully that's satisfying to everyone. Because we don't have any other projects in the field. We're not gathering any other data.
Just as a qualifier,
yeah.
People might have registered in a new GTLD for price reasons. You won't be able to tell. Even though the name may have been available in .com, they registered somewhere else. That could have been for price reasons.
Correct. I think, like I said before, Stan, I think we're going to have a general roll-up of just like general statements about competition and then where possible, we'll also break it down into price and non-price. And we'll probably have more general statements than price and non-price statements, because as we'll talk about tomorrow, it will be very hard to figure out when price competition is actually happening. All right, so that's what we will know, and hopefully we're going to know it all pretty soon. I think, actually, I'm hoping we'll have to figure out the sequence, but on our next series of sub-team calls, I think for each of these calls between now and Hyderabad, I want to concentrate on one of these topics that we're going to talk about here and actually talk through our findings and start to document them. So we'll have all the data, and then we'll say, like, what does it mean? And we'll actually have to have that discussion. And so non-price will be one of the calls that we'll have between now and Hyderabad. And I don't have anything else to talk about this topic, so maybe we're done 5 minutes early. Anyone else have a thought about non-price competition? Waldo.
Waldo here. The non-price analysis that we're doing just now is for registries only.
Correct. All right. We have 5 minutes back. What are we supposed to do now, staff people?
So we're going to reconvene in here at 4 p.m. to do the to resume the discussion about the application evaluation process, and you're going to get a briefing from Andrew Mack on the research that his firm has done so far.
Right. So you have 20 minutes. Be back here exactly at 4 o'clock.